All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another fresh episode of Strength Academy Podcast. This is Mundo, once again joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
So, we were out last week. I was busy at the gym, and Grayson was out in Miami for the coaching symposium, and he brought some pretty cool ideas back. And did you want to share kind of what that experience was about overall?
Yeah, it was a really cool kind of event. I think if they put on another one, I'll definitely be going back. If you're kind of starting out as a coach or you run a club and you don't really have a whole lot of people to just talk shop with every day, it's kind of a nice way to get to meet some other people to doing the same things that you're doing and bounce some ideas off folks. The lineup of speakers was really good. We had one of Japan's sports scientists that does a lot of the weightlifting programs at a university in Tokyo, presentations from Piros Dimas, some sports psychology, really kind of just covering the whole thing. Anything you kind of think of, there's kind of a topic there.
Was there good one that was your favorite?
I think that as far as practical considerations go, I think that like the most practical tips kind of came from the sports psych stuff, and really the presentation by Mike Isratel of Renaissance Periodization on weight cutting was really good. He kind of offered up some more kind of measured like a ways to approach a weight cut, so you don't have to go as extreme. So basically laid out strategies that you can use to help your athletes avoid having to sauna off the last 2 kilos.
Right.
So how to kind of get there on your own. So we can kind of go over some of that stuff. But one of the really interesting things that I got out of the talk by the Japanese coach was they have a completely different rule system for youth weightlifters and beginner weightlifters.
All right, so let's talk about that for a little bit then.
Yeah, so I thought this was a really cool idea, and it might be something that you guys can use in your gyms as like a technique day or kind of a practice centered around seeing if you can fulfill these scores. But they essentially, for beginners, so we'll talk about the percentages for high school or higher.
Okay.
But so if you're looking at, you know, men in high school or above, before you're allowed to compete in a full weightlifting competition, you have to compete in a technical competition. So you have a maximum weight you're allowed to lift. So for high school or higher boys, the most you're allowed to do in the snatch is 60% of your body weight, and the most you're allowed to do for clean and jerk is 80%. So pretty on the low end there. But you have to do a double at each attempt. So first attempt, you perform 2 consecutive snatches.
Right.
Then go up 2 consecutive snatches, and the most you're allowed to go up to is that 50%, or 60% body weight.
Right. Okay.
So what they're looking for is that the reps look the same. So they have kind of a demerit checklist where if the whole lift is too slow or the arms bend early, the back rounds in the pull, all of those are demerits. So you lose out of a possible 10 points for the first attempt. However many errors you make there brings that overall point down.
Okay.
And then you also get a point for how much of the maximum you're allowed to lift. So what you end up with is at the end of 6 attempts, you've done basically 12 reps where you're trying to do a double in exactly the same way each rep, which I think a lot of people would have a pretty hard time with. Like it's kind of difficult to,
To do a double, especially in a competition.
Yeah. And to do it really technically sound.
Mm-hmm.
Mundo's cat is attacking me right now. get that laser pointer, get him out of here. So yeah, you end up with, your technical score and then your score for, kind of what percentage range you lifted of body weight.
Right.
And I think that it's really interesting because you end up with 100 points total that are available. And in order to participate in the normal weightlifting competition, you have to score above an 85 And then you're allowed to participate in a normal weightlifting competition the way that we kind of all start.
Traditional one, yeah. Yeah.
So I think that I really like the idea. I think it would be really hard to change gears and implement in our system right now, because I based on the way that we're talking, is there's much more structure, and a lot of it starts in the elementary schools and the high schools. Right. So that's a very developed program that's kind of standardized across the country. Whereas we mostly have adults picking it up later in life, or, you know, second sport kind of things.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like when I was looking at some of the statistics, most of their lifters stop lifting after college or maybe even after high school.
Yeah, it seemed like they're adult. Theirs is almost the inverse of us in that they have the most in the elementary and high schools. Mm-hmm. A good amount at the college level, and then very few adults.
Okay.
Where we kind of have the majority people are of the, you know, kind of medium tier lifters in the U.S. are adults that picked it up,
right.
And, you know, people doing it as like adult recreation rather than starting in school age. So I think it makes a lot more sense if you're starting with that kind of premise. But I really like the idea of you're not allowed to go heavy until you can do two identical full squat lifts,
right?
You know, back to back in a competition. Do you think that that's like, if you go back and kind of imagine like yourself starting out, I don't know if I would have had the patience my first year in weightlifting to really focus enough to try to do a technical competition like mm-hmm. that. Do you think you would have been motivated by lifting 60% of your body weight?
Well, I think that would have been kind of like an approach I might have taken if I didn't already have kind of lifts that were heavier than that. Like, because with CrossFit, you kind of don't concentrate a whole lot on technique. You just focus on lifting a specific weight or just trying to get, you know, as much weight overhead as possible in a workout. And I think that if I would have had a more technical aspect to approach to my learning the lifts and competing, like, it would have been different for me. I think it would have had a different outcome because I would have been more focused on technique earlier on in the process, and maybe not had as many technical flaws that I did bringing into weightlifting. That probably would have been a much better like base to build off of than just trying to, like, because I remember my first snatch at like 95 pounds and it was like not the greatest. Like, I still have a video of it, and sometimes I look back at it and it's just this atrocious looking lift that, you know, I put together. And like, if I would have had a technical base that was built from the perspective of the Japanese, where they're giving you two chances to make two technically very sound lifts and then basing your competition readiness off of that, I think that would have been a better system to kind of like learn from. But it's hard to implement as an adult because you've already had all these bad habits that you brought into the process. And it's like they take their lifters from a very young age and shape them into what they could potentially be as they get older. But we have the opposite problem where we're getting people from other sports or from other modalities of fitness, barbell sports, and they're bringing bad habits into weightlifting, or they're bringing different technical aspects that don't necessarily belong in weightlifting or that aren't ideal for weightlifting. So, like, I think I would have been better off if I would have had maybe a more technical, like, system to kind of get brought up in, as opposed to just like, oh, learning the lifts in a 5 second, or not 5 second, but like a 5 minute tutorial in a CrossFit class. Because, like, when you're teaching 20 people how to snatch, and you got an hour in the entirety of the class, and you got to fit a warm up in, you got to fit some, you know, some instruction, the actual workout itself, and some cool down. Like, if you structure your classes that way, how long do you actually have to spend on snatch and clean and jerk technique? And in this system, I think it just develops people in a much more general way to be better lifters later on.
Yeah, what I think it does really well, and this is something that we try to do within our gym, is when we get a new person, and even if they've done the lifts before, we aren't trying to get them to hit PRs their first day in the gym.
Right.
We're not always kind of trying to push weight, because I'll admit that early on, when, you know, like the first couple months of running a club back at the CrossFit gym, I had a very much more focus on, oh, well, is the weight on the bar going up? Then the technique is good enough for the weight on the bar to be going up.
Yeah.
And really now, when I get somebody in, it's, we kind of, I don't try to like fit them strictly into percentages, because some days are going to be better than others. Right. And it's really just, you know, maybe it's, we're going to spend the first month doing a ton of snatches at 40 kilos, because that's kind of a weight that you can move. And until we make those technical adjustments and that weight's looking better, than not moving that up. And that was one of the pieces of advice that kind of lines up with this, is one of the things that Piros Dimas kind of was saying he suggests for beginners and people starting out, is kind of really taking a step away from worrying about what the weights are, and just kind of finding the weight that you can make the technical adjustments and getting a ton of reps in with lighter weights while you're kind of using the squats and pulls and that sort of stuff to build up your conditioning,
right?
And your strength, but, you know, doing a lot more reps with a lot lighter weights to really get dialed in on that technical process. And I think that if we had some sort of, you know, test out competition in the States, we wouldn't run into that issue of it highlights the importance of developing the technique from the first day you walk in the gym.
Yeah.
And it gets I bet it gets people really focused on, oh no, these are the things that I need to do in order to actually compete. So it gives you that kind of first goal, versus I think a lot of us get kind of caught up in, how fast can I snatch 100 kilos?
Right. Yeah.
How long will it take me to do that? When can I get to these numbers? And we kind of rush past, oh, it's good enough. You know, and people obsess over their technique, but I think it's usually like not right off the bat. Right off the bat, people want to get stronger.
Right.
And then later on, they realize, oh, I need to get better to get stronger. And I think that instituting something where there's an objective score where you're ranked on your technique,
mm-hmm.
Is probably like a really powerful way to motivate people to take every rep seriously, like kind of how we talk about.
Well, yeah, and the thing is, like, when people get to the level of caring about the technique, in our sport in the United States, I think that it's at a level where they're almost already elite. Like, if you look at some of the higher end athletes, like, they're really focused and obsessed about how perfect they perform reps. Like, you don't see a whole lot of sloppy, like, Instagram videos from the people that are on the world team. Like, most of them work very hard at, you know, honing the sword of their technical, you know, abilities as a weightlifter. And it's just, I think that people, when they're starting out, they do have a little bit more focus on, oh, I have to lift this number. Or so, like, when people start out, and we have standards for, like, qualifying for the AO series and things like that, and maybe their goal is to hit those numbers, and they might be able to do it in a local competition, and then they show up to the AO series and it's not that great, like, or you see their technique fall apart, or they're just not ready for that level of competition, like, technically. And so I think that having a system where you can prove to your coaches and to, you know, the people that you're competing with that you belong there, you know, that you're able to technically show the mastery of the lifts at the point that you're at, I think is really important. So I think that the lifters that do care about their technique end up getting better than everybody else, and they build their strength base, but I think that they're focused on technique and performing perfect reps and making the build-up reps matter, like the warm-up weights and technique, applying technique to those as well, like just not being lazy about them. That's what separates them from the people that are just doing this and getting to a, like a medium level of it. Like, they don't obsess as much as some of the higher level athletes.
And those are some of the values that we really try to instill in our lifters is, you know, can you, when you do your empty bar work and your warm up, can you move that as precisely as you're intending to move your heavier sets?
Right.
You know, are you staying focused within there? I think that that kind of helps, but I also think that it falls on us as coaches. Like, as I said earlier, like I used to really just kind of think about things as far as weight. And it really falls on it. So if you're listening and you do help people out and you're coaching, when you ask people for goals, a lot of times you get numbers.
Right.
But try to, you know, maybe prod them or kind of push them into answering like, okay, what's your technique goal? What do you want your lift to look like?
Right, yeah.
And I think that might fall on us of using... Like, because it's hard because so much in weightlifting is just objective and measurable. It's
right.
did you lift this weight? Did you not lift this weight? What is your total?
Right.
Those, it's really, really, really objective. But I think that adding, you know, like a stylistic component of what do you want, like, what's your technique goal? Who do you want to look like when you lift?
Right.
You know, I mean, that's going to change based on your body type. But like, what lifters do you look up to?
Right.
Do you think that guy slacked off on training his technique to get where he is? Or do you think he was just chasing getting strong, or do you think he really worked on moving like that first?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that it falls on us as coaches to highlight the importance of having good muscular balance, you know, like not rushing into weights, building up the strength in your shoulders and hips, and really emphasizing that technical development and trying to get people excited about making little progress, is like being a little more upright in their overhead squat.
Yeah.
And getting people as excited about technical breakthroughs or going through a whole workout without bending your arms as they are about hitting a new PR.
Right.
Which is hard because it's objectively less exciting,
right,
to just kind of get something right. But if you can train yourself, and you know, we kind of talk about, you know, how you talk to yourself and the way you conceptualize your goals. If you can kind of start reframing some of that towards, you know, what do I want this to look like? And if we're doing a percentage workout and 80% isn't looking how you want, being willing to say, okay, well, right now we're 12 weeks out from the competition, so I'm just going to drop back to 70% and make all of these look the way that I want them,
yeah,
to. Because that's going to matter more. Because if you're breaking down but making the lift, that's just teaching you how to break down and make a lift.
Right.
It's not teaching you the correct positions that we want to see. So we're really trying out using you know, lighter weights for longer with our kind of new folks coming in, and trying to frame things as this whole training block is about learning these movements and getting them down.
Right.
And doing a ton of reps with them. One thing I did think was kind of interesting was, you know, so I asked Piros at the end of his presentation, you know, so what sort of frequency do you typically recommend for the lifts? And his answer actually kind of surprised me, and it was every day. Both of them. Snatch, okay, clean, and jerk variation.
Every
training day. Session. And typically, you know, I, early on in a cycle, we'll have a day dedicated to one thing. So we'll have a snatch focused workout, a jerk focused workout, a clean workout, and a workout with the total.
Right.
But what do you think? So, on one hand, I like the getting people focused on one thing, but also I see that there's value in the more frequently you practice a skill, the faster you'll develop that skill.
Right.
And if we're limiting weights to be fairly light, do you think that there's a problem with having a beginner do 5 sets of triples on various exercises multiple times per week if you're kind of limiting that weight, if it's not always going heavier? Like, say they can snatch 55 pounds pretty well. What do you think the added benefit of, you know, having 4 snatch workouts a week versus 3 or 2?
Well, so I think that when you have just more immersion with the lifts, you're going to have some more results on the technical side, and you'll probably build up some strength as well, because obviously you're lifting weight. Just the physical strength development won't be as fast as if you're doing like heavier sets of weights and things like that. But like, I think I like the idea of doing this, the lifts every day, because you're just going to get more technically proficient as long as you're doing them correctly.
And one of the things he stressed was that doing the lifts every day doesn't mean snatch and clean and jerk from the floor. That he means, you know, power snatch and overhead squat, or snatch pull plus hang snatch. So like using, he talked a lot about including lots and lots of exercise variation to get people comfortable doing a lot of different things.
Yeah. Well, so like it's kind of like with other skills in other sports. Like if you want to learn how to dribble a basketball with both hands, it's probably better if you practice every day. You know, you want a better jump shot, it's probably to practice it every day. And it's something that's not highly physically demanding. But like if you program stuff to where you're giving people a lot of reps in both lifts every day and some variation of them, I think that they can make a lot of progress in that amount of time. So it's just a matter of like what you hope to accomplish, what the lifter wants to accomplish, and getting those things to match up and then programming accordingly. So like for somebody that's new, I think having them clean and jerk and snatch every day or some variation of it is probably good for them. For somebody that's more advanced, they might not need to do it every day or not as heavy. But I know we've been kind of playing with different programming ideas, and so like I think that the best approach is the one that gets the lifter the most out of the lifter.
Yes.
And so whatever that happens to be, if it's something that looks more like a Bulgarian method towards the end of a training cycle, that's fine. If it's a beginner, somebody that's doing a lot more of both classical lifts every day, some variation of them, if it's an intermediate, just whatever, maybe a combination of both, like a heavy day for snatch, light day for clean and jerk, and then same thing, like just keep repeating it. But you can vary it in infinite amount of ways. What matters is that getting the results that you want for the lifter. And I think that the approach is only as important as the results that you hope to get collectively for both you and the lifter.
Yeah, and I think that since, you know, we've kind of seen value in doing it both ways, and there's good rational arguments for both kind of approaches. And I think that that just kind of highlights the importance of periodizing your training, having some periods of time where maybe if it's early on in the cycle and you're really focusing on building up some hypertrophy, you can do the lifts a little less frequently while you're kind of working on that base. So if you're having, you know, a big workout for each lift and then a day where you do both, after which you're doing all of your bodybuilding work, all of your higher rep squatting and pulling, all of those kind of accessory exercises, because you have to look at what's the intent of this block. And if the intent of the block is to increase muscle size, then you want to put more energy into your accessory work during those periods. And you're really looking for maintaining your technical positions, maybe doing a little bit of reps with those lifts from positions that you're weak in. Maybe you're doing more power snatches during the hypertrophy phase.
Right.
And then increasing the frequency throughout your periodization. So when you move from hypertrophy to like more of a strength phase, maybe you're increasing your frequency. And then when you get closest to competition, you have the highest frequency. So I think that, you know, there's really good arguments to be made for both. And if you're planning out your training cycles, like, you know, throughout the year and kind of thinking, okay, well, how does this cycle build into what we're going to be doing over the next, where we're going to be this time next year?
Right.
And that tends to be how we kind of think about our programs within the gym, is we kind of say, what's the most important meet that we're doing this year? Lots of times that's the state championships or an AO series. And it's, okay, well, we'll be doing lots and lots of very specific training leading up to that.
Yeah.
But then once that's over, right now, we're kind of back to a more general training block. Where we're doing a lot of fives on pulls and squats. We're really making sure that we're building up a lot of general strength. And we're really breaking the lifts down into segments. Because in competition prep, we tend to do a lot more practicing the full movements from the floor.
Right.
Because we're trying to express everything that we've done in those prior cycles. But now that we're kind of taking it's unfortunate that we have to do this kind of more volume training leading into the state championships for October.
Right.
But you don't always get to pick what you want. We chose to make AO2 our kind of number one.
Right.
And, you know, so now everybody's kind of back in this base building thing. So we'll have a peak for that, but it won't be... It's hard to think of it as, like, peaking within the context of the 12-week program is those last 3 weeks.
Right.
And so we always do that for competition. But what those first two, mesocycles within that whole program look like should be periodized as well, where if it's, you know, a competition prep cycle, you should be really focusing your efforts on, you know, singles and doubles, you know, doing the lifts more frequently and heavier. And then, you know, so that whole 12 weeks, you're sticking a lot closer to the lifts. But if you're in kind of a strength or a hypertrophy 12 weeks, you still might end with a peak for the heavy singles if you're doing a competition.
Right.
But those first 8 weeks are a lot more variation and a lot more strength focus. Yeah. So I think if you are like me and are kind of torn between these two ideas of doing one thing and putting all your effort into just snatching today and not worrying about what it's going to feel like to do clean and jerks after this and not like pulling punches on your like top snatch sets because you know you have to clean and jerk next.
Right.
And maybe that's kind of a mental toughness issue, but I think that people do that. And you can control for that by just making
give up
them
a little
giving,
early on the snatches. Right?
Yeah. Like, you know, by giving them one task.
Yeah.
So I think if you're, you know, designing training for your team or your athletes or yourself, say, like, what meet is the most important and where do you need to put the majority of your strength work within the year?
Right.
And kind of make a longer-term plan, because if you're trying to do hypertrophy, strength, and peak as month one, month two, and month three of a training program over and over and over again... I mean, you'll probably keep moving in that direction.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to come up for, like, a true peak that often, like, I think, you know, he was saying that the Japanese are really peaking twice a year.
Yeah.
And I kind of like that idea where it's, you know, they've got, you know, a build-up, a test to see where they're at, then they get some work in at those heavier percentages and go out to the competition or whatever it is.
I like that structure, too. And so another thing I wanted to touch on is when we were talking about like having people do like a technical cycle, right, where they're doing more classic lifts every day, like Piro suggested, right? So one thing I like about that is that so we had an athlete, she was on her own program and she kind of got off track with the team and she ended up doing her own individualized program that like Grayson and I were working on her with, and while she didn't hit brand new PRs in snatch and clean and jerk all the way, she did make technical gains. So like, I don't want people to discount, like maybe you go through a training cycle and you don't add a bunch of kilos onto your PR lifts, but she got so technically proficient at doing triples and doubles and then hitting lifts consistently at percentages that were much higher. And overall, her technique improved. So, like, I was proud of the amount of work that she put in and of the results that she got. She may not have gotten brand new numbers to work off of in everything, but she technically increased the base of her, you know, ability to hit lifts more consistently. And so I think that when you have people, especially new people, and I think this kind of goes in correlation with what the Japanese do, is, like, you want to build proficiency and consistency first and then allow them to hit heavier weights, because then when you get to the problem with just allowing people to just throw on whatever they want on the bar and go after it is that sometimes they'll get away with doing some things that they won't be able to repeat. And what we want and what I look for in the lifts as a coach is, like, I want repeatability. So it's great if you hit a 10-pound PR or you hit, you know, a 5-kilo PR, but can you repeat it? like how close can you be to repeating it? And that's why we have people do drop sets or we'll do back off sets. It's like, you hit this heavy lift, yeah, but like how repeatable is it for people? And I think that's the whole point of the having them do doubles is just like, yeah, you might be able to do one proficiently well and execute it with good technique, but can you do a second one and execute it just as well? And I think that that shows, especially right now, we're in the beginning of a training cycle where we're leading up to competition and we have a lot of volume. And so you'll get people doing, we're doing triples right now for a lot of things. And you'll see on that third rep, they just give up, or they just don't want to do it, or it's not as focused. And so like I'll know that first rep is pretty crisp. The second rep might be a little wonky, and then the third rep might be better because they made a correction. But like getting them to do all three reps the same every single time is very difficult.
Yeah, it's a big challenge, and that's why I like doing kind of multiple threes, especially because it almost is like a simulation of a heavier weight, right, that you'll get to.
Yeah.
Where how it feels to do that third hang snatch, it feels like it's about 10% heavier than you are there. And if you can kind of guide your athletes into how they need to think about that third set, where if it's heavier, that doesn't mean to change your pull.
Right.
That means you have to be faster to get underneath the bar and be more precise with your movement. So doing triples is kind of, it kind of matters how you're thinking about them. Because right, if you're just trying to pull the bar harder and harder rep to rep, that might end up creating more problems than it's solving, because you end up over pulling when you're tired.
Right.
But if you think about, I'm going to make all of these look the same, and even if I'm tired, I'm still going to move as fast as I can to that position. Because a lot of that is under your conscious control.
Right.
But it's just hard to really kind of dial in and force yourself to bring that intensity to that third rep of the fifth set at like 75%.
Yeah.
That's the hardest rep of the workout. And if you can train yourself to be focused and deliberate even then, or, you know, what I love to see when we're doing multiple triples too, is that if the final set looked better than the middle set, and people are making those adjustments, that's where you can really tell if, you know, you're, because again, like the goal of the workout is to practice the lifts.
Right.
And if you're improving the quality set to set, that's a good sign that you're, you know, really honing your skills, right, and you're staying focused within that workout. And if you're getting distracted and that last set just kind of really falls apart, it's, you know, it's a measure for you of, oh man, I need to do a little bit more, like get my heart rate up a little bit more with my, like push the pace a little bit with my warm-ups,
sure,
so that this doesn't feel so hard at the end. Or I need to improve my mental focus and staying focused even when I'm uncomfortable and things are hard.
Yeah.
So it can kind of give you that feedback of what are the areas that where do you break down? Is it a breakdown with a commitment of getting under the bar? Is it when you're tired, you try to change things?
Right.
It gives you like really valuable feedback as an athlete to say, okay, well, when I got tired, I just had a really hard time caring about that third rep. And then making that your goal for the next workout is the last rep of every set, I'm going to do twice as hard every time. So kind of using that as a way to kind of rate yourself. I'm like, how did you do today? Did you stay in it the whole time?
Right.
And I think that multiple triples are mentally challenging in that way. And beneficial, like especially early in a training block.
Right. All right. So, was there anything else that you wanted to go over as far as like the Japanese system went? Because like we kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent, but
yeah,
we're still connected. But I didn't know if you wanted to talk about anything specific that they did besides the like the doubles and the technical aspect of their. Their lifting challenges.
A lot of the presentation was on like some of the sports science research that he's doing within the university, and a lot of it was, you know, looking at the correlation between lean body mass and, you know, performance.
And what was that?
No real surprise there. The more lean body mass you have, the heavier weights you tend to lift.
Oh.
So
okay.
Maximizing how lean you are for your weight category and making it a priority amongst, which I believe, which negatively impacts our ability to have 67 kilo weightlifters. But I really think that the priority of a beginner is to put on a lot of muscular body weight as they learn the lifts.
Yeah. Unfortunately, we don't have very small people in our gym. Most of our folks are either getting bigger or they're already pretty well built.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it was kind of nice to see like some you know, trends graphed out that kind of support that idea of, you know, if you've got a very talented high school kid, don't try to limit him to stay within whatever weight class he's in just because he can, like, place two places higher at the youth nationals. It's much, much more important that you let that kid develop into what's going to make him a great 20-year-old lifter.
Yeah.
And, you know, so if you're having your kids cut a bunch of weight to try to fit down into some lightweight categories because they might be able to pick up a medal, I think that, you know, you're probably limiting their long-term progress there. He did a really interesting comparison of muscle thickness between one of the winners of the World Championships and one of the Japanese national team members, and they just kind of compared cross-sectional area.
Sure.
And it was very interesting because they had very similar sized quads, very similar sized shoulders, but the guy who was performing at a higher level had substantially thicker lower back and hamstrings. So that was kind of an interesting thing where it might, you know, if you kind of look in the mirror and you realize you're all quads and no hammies, that putting a little bit of time developing some muscularity in the hamstrings and the lower back might be a good kind of idea for you there. Yeah. And then, yeah, one of those, you know, little training tips was they really like to do varied height stuff. So not just power snatch high and full snatch, but do mid-height catches for snatch balances hip snatches, just to add a little bit more familiarity to that midpoint position.
Right.
So we might play with a little bit of that. A fun anecdote from Pyrrhus's kind of whole demonstration was apparently when he was 7, weighing 35 kilos, he back squatted 100 kilos.
Jeez.
So that's kind of nuts.
That's what, more than 2.5 times. I just thought that was kind of body weight. 2.5 times body weight, roughly?
Something like, yeah, 60 would be double body, or 70 would be double body weight. So, yeah, pretty brutal there. I guess,
almost 3 times body weight?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think he did say that, you know, he realizes in hindsight that he could have not squatted as much, but he was always great at squats, so he did them a lot, and realizes, like, I probably didn't need to do the 320 kilo squat, because that's just so high above what his competition...
320 kilo squat?
I think he
said
he did a 320 in the squat.
Jeez.
And then just kind of hearing his, the version of the Bulgarian program that they did with three a day sessions for 3 to 4 months before the Olympics. So a morning, an afternoon, an after dinner session for 3 days a week. Lots of, kind of crazy stuff. And I thought it was very funny that he said that after competitions, because his coach was very focused on doing just the Bulgarian method, and before he moved to Greece's team, he did more of like a Russian style with kind of more reps. So he was saying that after competition, he'd kind of be sneaky and just warm up with doing more hangs and some push presses and stuff. Right. And, you know, his coach would say, "What are you doing? You're not following the program." He's like, No. Your work is the heavy stuff. I'm just warming up."
Right.
So he'd like find ways to sneak in more exercise variation. Which kind of goes along with what Tyler was saying, where he's just like, you feel like you're getting weaker sometimes. Right. So he'd find ways to kind of sneak in, you know, some of that. So some of his recommendations for U.S. coaches was, you know, beginners of all ages, technique is number one. You have to learn the technique, do a lot of different exercises, kind of build up their GPP, and make sure that the technical base is sound. And then using more of kind of a Russian style, working a lot within that 65 to 85% range, harping on them about technique, doing a lot of exercise variations. And then once people get more advanced, they can do 2 to 3 waves of a Russian training and then finish with a peak that's a little bit more Bulgarian.
Right, right.
And that's kind of in line with what a lot of people have said, but it's just kind of nice to hear Piros kind of talking about
his experience and then how that fit in with his training. And
yeah, and, like, you know, one thing that, you know, you come across in every realm of every strength training circle is do squats and pulls for 5x5.
Oh, okay.
Like, if you're building a base, that's a pretty good place to build. And it's really funny because you see that turn up everywhere from bodybuilding.com to, like, strength training routines from right. the 30s to Piros Dimas to starting strength. Basically,
5x5s.
If you're in doubt and you're doing some strength work, you can probably... fives are probably a good call.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, there's a ton of stuff, and I really recommend that everybody get out there. All the presenters were really interesting. You could go up to them afterwards and ask questions, and there was a lot of good just kind of meeting with other coaches. So if you're a coach and you are kind of wanting to meet some people and network and kind of bounce some ideas off people, I really recommend you guys check it out. I had a great time out there.
Yeah, and I think that they're going to try to continue to bring different professionals from these industries. So, like, they had coaches from the Miami Heat, the yep. Chicago Bears. They had Japanese weightlifting coaches. They had, obviously, Piros was there, Mike Catone. So, like, all the people that are involved in our sport and then people that are outside of the sport but still involved in strength training brought stuff to the table, and not just questions about programming, but, like, athlete development, different areas of, like, sports psychology, as well as just, like, general strength and conditioning stuff.
Yeah, gym, everything from gym culture to cutting weight for competition and staying hydrated during training. And
yeah, a lot to cover, but not we're not going to cover it all in this podcast, but we just wanted to talk about some of the more interesting aspects of the conversations that we've had over the past week concerning some of these topics. But definitely the Japanese training system is one of them that we kind of wanted to bring up. And I think that overall, Grayson got a sense of we're heading in the right direction in a lot of the things that we do in the gym and how we put together the training and the environment and things like that. And we're I guess it's reinforcement that we're kind of on the right track.
Yeah, it's always nice when you know, hear somebody that's, you know, a professional kind of touching on some of the things that you've been doing, and you kind of go, oh, okay, so the things that I have been reading the right books,
yeah.
I have been thinking in the right, like, okay. framework. It's always...
Or adopting ideas that other people are, they see value in, too. So, like, the Wim Hof breathing was one of them that came up that
we've
been trying to... we know we've talked about this before on the podcast about, like, breathing techniques and breath control, and we've probably brought up Wim Hof a little bit earlier in the podcast season, but that came up again, and it's something that other professional sports teams use as part of their warm-up for practices, and I think that you came across that, and you were asking about that as well, right?
Yeah, so, I mean, I had looked into, you know, doing some of the Wim Hof breathing stuff. I had that weird no jacket all winter thing.
Yeah.
Doing cold showers in the wintertime and just standing outside to see if you can do it. And I think that might be a little extreme, but, you know, one of the things that the strength coach from the Miami Heat said is that they were doing Wim Hof breathing a couple days a week before practice, and that people were reporting better energy levels in the workout, that they had some increased mental clarity, that they just felt, like, more ready to go. So that's one of those things that we're playing with now. So we're encouraging our folks to do that a couple days a week. You know, some people love it, some people hate it, and we'll kind of see what the...
If
people feel like they're training a little better.
If we could just bring some new ideas to the table and then have some people adopt them, that makes it worth it, because if it makes their training better and it gets them to perform better, then it's worth it teaching it to one person if they can implement it and make it work for them.
Yeah, and that's, you know, the important thing to keep in mind with training is that there isn't a formula or any one thing that everyone needs to do.
Yeah.
That it's all very dynamic, and just finding little pieces here and there that work for one person might not work for another, and keeping your programming outlook open to new ideas and open to trying things.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll try something and go, that didn't work super well in this situation, and you got to adjust fire. But every now and then you find new stuff. Yeah. And I think if you're not playing with, I mean, part of, you know, what we talk about on the podcast and what we do here is, you know, we play with ideas. Yeah. Don't be sold on any one thing. Toy with something for a while. Put that hat on, kind of think about it, try to view things through that lens, and then evaluate whether you want to implement it. You know, right. So kind of toy with some of those ideas.
And that kind of brings me to, like, the question that I was kind of mulling over this week, and that was, like, at what point do people reach that makes them act instead of just think about doing something? So, like, we were talking about if somebody wanted to make it to AO Finals, right? And that was their goal. They're not there yet. They don't have that qualifying total, but they say they want to get there. So at what point do they go from saying they want to get there to actually doing the things that they need to get there? And it's like when you read those self-help books, or I like to call them self-optimization books. So you read this book and it tells you to do these things and do this, get out of your comfort zone, you know, be 1% better every day, you know, whatever, like you could throw out a million of those meme sayings and like it would apply to whatever book you've read, you know. So at what point do you stop just collecting that information and actually start implementing it? So like if somebody told you like, I want to make it to AO Finals, what would you tell them, and what would you see as the turning point of them actually making progress toward getting toward that goal?
Well, so I think that a lot of it has to do with, you know, there's, to me, it's different to hear information or read information or collect facts or collect tips. And it's different to internalize that. And I think that when you internalize that is when you kind of start actually taking that effective action, where if you know that skipping practice is worse than going to practice,
right,
and you know that kind of offhand, but only when you actually kind of take that in and say, no, I'm going to hold myself to that, do you actually start, like, even on days that you don't feel good, going in and just doing something.
Right.
So I think that a lot of it has to do with, I feel like there's a threshold where people, something makes them reflect. There's, you know, maybe it's for, this might be a better analogy, and I'll try to weave it back into qualifying for something. But if, say, like, you want to quit smoking.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And you know that smoking's bad. It says that it's going to kill you on the package. It's well documented. All your friends say, hey, you know, you should really quit smoking. Right. And the TV ad says, hey, you should really quit smoking. And there's a billboard. These people know these things. But that moment when you internalize it might be when you woke up and coughed for 15 minutes and some weird brown stuff came up. That might be the moment you go, oh, I need to. So there's that aha moment. Yeah. There's that moment of reflection, or something happens to you. So for qualifying for AO, it might be you get to the end of the training cycle and you've been sort of halfway committed to making it in, and you have a poor result at the competition. That might be that oh moment.
Yeah.
Where, you know, maybe you see a video of your last lift and you go, why does it look like I'm not even trying to lock that out as hard as I can? Why is what I feel so disconnected from what I saw there? And like, so I think that it has to be something that bothers you before you take the action.
Okay.
A lot of times.
So I've seen this happen with people in finances and things like that, and like trying to get out of debt and things like that are similar to that, where I guess the idea is
the pain of where you want to be has to exceed the pain of where you are. And so for somebody to make that leap of saying like, oh, I want to be at this level, right? Let's take weightlifting, for example. Like, I want to make it to AO finals. The qualifying total is a 50 kilo jump from the AO series total. 50 kilos. So if I wanted to qualify for AO finals, I would need to put like 40 kilos onto my total.
Yeah.
So at what point, like, does me wanting to be there, it's not enough. I have to start prioritizing things in my life to make it to where I can get there. And I think that's, for me, is the turning point for an athlete, is when they start to prioritize the things that they need to do to get to where they want to be. And I've seen this, I watch the Olympic hopefuls and I see what they do leading up to meets. And I've seen kind of like how they approach these types of things. And I think the underlying theme is that they prioritize that goal with such ferocity that they don't allow any other thing to conflict with it. So like one lifter, she was saying that, you know, she won't go out and hang out with friends because she might be out too late and that'll ruin her sleep schedule and her ability to recover. You know, she doesn't drink or she doesn't do these other things because she knows that it'll interfere with her ability to lift the next day. Or knowing that she has to set this amount of time aside to stretch or to do the recovery modalities that she needs to do to get back into the gym the next day. So like the focus of a champion is much different than somebody that's just, you know, doing this on the side for the occasional, you know, weightlifting meet, local weightlifting meet. So like the idea for me is that prioritizing is what makes the difference in an athlete that gets to the levels that they want to be at and the ones that don't. It's just like, well, you know, you want to compete at this level, but you just don't show up all the time, or you skip out on reps, or you shorten your workout and you forget like entire blocks of accessory work. It's like, that's just prioritizing that something else is more important. Like it's more important for you to be out of the gym earlier, or it's more important for you to do this other thing, you know? So like for me, that's the turning point of when I see people or when I hear people tell me something like they want to make it to this level, and then actually showing the actual steps that it takes to get there. And I think taking those steps and making sure that you're like, when Grayson puts stuff in the program, he doesn't tell you to try out that Wim Hof breathing because, you know, it's just something he wants to see you do. Like he's a mad scientist. Like he knows that doing this is going to enhance your training session in a way, because he's tried it out. And when he programs things, it's just like, if you skip out on the rest of it, there was an intention for that exercise to be in there. It's not just filling up space on the blank paper. Like there's reasons for those things to be on there. And so when people skip out on those, or they don't do any of it entirely, they don't show up, like that just shows me is like, oh, well, you want to get to this level someday. It's just the same as any other pipe dream that anybody else has. It's like, well, just, I might clean out the garage someday. Like I might go wash my car someday, or, you know, I might pick up that book and read it someday. Like that doesn't accomplish anything. You're not prioritizing what you want to accomplish and what you're doing to accomplish it. And that, like, for me, that's the turning point. And that's where, like, I struggle. And that's what I've been thinking about this week, is like, why do people, you know, say they want something and then they don't do anything to get to it? And that includes myself. Like, I'll say, like, I want to accomplish this, and then I don't do the things that I need to do to accomplish it.
Yeah, and I catch myself doing it all the time. It's like, oh, I want to squat 200 kilos, yeah, but I skipped breakfast today, so right. I got worse.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, so
that kind of stuff, yeah.
So I think that, you know, it requires... Well, one is, if you're working, like, from a coach's perspective, when an athlete tells you their kind of stretch goal, right? Like, right. Something they could do, but it could go either way. You know, they want something they want to accomplish. It's important for you to remind them of the process goals that are involved with that. So if, you know, you want to make, you know, AO finals or nationals total, you say, great, that's a great goal. Do you know what else will it take for you to get there? Right. What do you have to have in place? And if you kind of plant that seed of, well, what do you need in place to accomplish that goal? It's like, well, I probably need to not get injured. All right, your increase of injury goes up by 50% if you don't sleep 8 hours.
Yeah.
So you need to sleep 8 hours to make sure that you're doing what you can to prevent injury. It's, you know, okay, if we're keeping with injury, dehydration results in a higher rate of injury. So you need to make sure that you're hydrated. You need to make sure that you're recovered from your workouts. So there you go. You've got sleep, food, water all lined up right away.
Right.
And I think that sometimes it takes people hearing that information, but they won't start putting it into effect until they get to the end of a training cycle that they didn't do those things and something hurts or they don't have the performance they want. So I think that, you know, there's groundwork that you can lay as a coach or as a peer to be like, hey, are you keeping up with your stretching? Like, you know, that's like, because, you know, you're a team, right? So you want to keep up with each other. Like, if you know somebody's got a goal, keep them on track. Talk to them about it. Like, hey, how are you feeling? You ready to hit that total? What are you working on today to get better? You know, what's your focus? But I think that it takes, you know, maybe having that kind of off result or bad training cycle to make people go, oh, the things that everyone's been saying are things I need to actually do.
Right. And that, well, that's the difference, I think, is that there has to be some personal responsibility taken by the athlete to accomplish those things. So, like, I, as much as I want every single athlete to live up to their potential, as much as I want it for them, I can't do it for them. And so my job is to try to bring out the best in you, but you have to want it for yourself as well. And so a lot of the time, the effort that I want to put isn't matched by, you know, the other person. So, like, if this person just really isn't interested in doing the things that they need to do to get to the level that they want to be at, then I can only help them so much. Like, I can lay out the groundwork for you. I can give you the roadmap. But if you're not willing to actually go on the journey, like, you're not going to get anywhere. And that, for me, like, I want every athlete to be the best that they can be, to reach their potential as a lifter. And I think most of them are capable of qualifying for the AO finals if they just did the right things that they needed to get there. Not everybody wants to get there, but the people that do, the people that are kind of like on the verge of taking it seriously and want to improve themselves, because not everybody gets to go to AO finals, not everybody gets to go to nationals, and some of these competitions that, like, some of our other athletes are starting to build towards, like maybe international competitions, like in other countries, like that is such an amazing opportunity to be able to experience that. And I think that a lot of time, like, maybe this, they don't have the belief in themselves to know that they can get there. They're like, but I know they can get there. I know that they're capable. I know that it's possible for them to get to these levels. It's just a matter of just like, how bad do they want it?
Yeah. And I think that it really does come down to, you know, there's, you know, the two types of phrasing of the goals is, I'd like to make an American Open finals, or I will.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you'd like to, then, you know, we're going to train and try not to miss training. And,
sure,
you know, we'll see where you land. But if you're phrasing it as, I will do this, then these are the things that you're going to be required to do as kind of a prerequisite for that.
Yeah.
And taking those step backs of saying, okay, well, here's where I want to be in 2 years,
right,
which means these are the things that I need to be doing now to build toward that. And, you know, that's why I really like, I think stretch goals and, like, big picture goals are motivating.
Right.
And are important to kind of have as, like, that carrot where you're like, oh, I'm going for it. This is my big stretch goal. But I think that on the daily basis, if you really want to make it as close as you can to that goal, you have to be goal setting intra-workout. You need to say, what's my workout goal today?
Right.
Or, you know, setting goals like, I'm going to drink enough water every day for this training cycle. And, like, holding yourself accountable to those smaller things that aren't as exciting to think about. Because I think the problem is that having a big goal of, I want a total 300, is motivating, right? It's exciting to think about totaling 300.
Sure.
It's not very exciting to think about drinking an extra protein shake to get your protein in every single day.
Right.
So the big goals are there to keep you excited and to keep you motivated, but they need to also be making you excited to not skip practice or to go to bed an hour early.
Right.
And those are the things that it's harder to be excited about. So I think finding ways to make yourself excited about those little things, maybe the opposite of taking a picture of your watch when you wake up, but take a picture to show off how early you go to sleep. Might be a funny way to do it.
There you go.
Like check in on your story, bedtime, wake up. It's like, yeah, I sleep for 9 hours a day. Take that. But I think, finding ways to be excited about the process, the little things that build it up. And it's hard to, because I have things that I want to do, but I have times that I, know that I slacked off on my warm up a little bit. And just finding ways to kind of reinforce the daily things that you want to do to match that goal. But I think that moment of, I need to take action on this, really has to come from like a moment of self-reflection where you realize where you are isn't getting you where you want to be.
Right.
And it takes that kind of, difficult self-look where you're just like, I haven't been taking, like, I didn't have a great result in this training cycle, but I also didn't take very good care of my body. I ate nothing but hot dogs and mac and cheese the last month of this training cycle.
Yeah.
Or you get to a Saturday workout and where you've been making really good strides, and then you went out and had 3 beers the night before, and you come in and you feel really bad.
Right.
And so it's not that, you set the goal and then you immediately abstain from alcohol and never have a problem, lapsing into having some fun the night before a training session, because you don't actually learn it that way.
Right.
What you have to say is you have to have everybody tell you drinking will hurt your performance, and then you have to have an experience where you go out drinking the night before a training session and come in and everything hurts and you lift terribly. And that's your moment where you go, I need to not drink so much. Like, I think that you have to have those kind of rude awakening moments where it's, oh man, I didn't get to do this competition because my knees hurt too bad. But then when I looked back at my training log, I hadn't stretched in a month and I've been sleeping really bad. I think you have to have those moments of struggle and kind of like self-doubt of like, oh man, can I do this, to really reflect on, did I do everything I could to do this?
Right.
And I think that every athlete has to go through those periods of, oh man, I thought I was trying really hard, but upon reassessment, like, I see that there's all of these things that I could have done differently or I could have done to be more optimal. And then I think those moments are what require you to take action, and that you can try to start with good groundwork, but almost everybody's slacking somewhere.
Right.
And until you actually run into it causing a problem, you don't take it as seriously, because maybe the first year and a half of your training, you were able to go out and, party on Friday nights and then train Saturday and you were fine. But now you're a little bit better, and to hit those heavier weights, you've got to be closer to at your best.
Right.
And now it's starting to present itself as an issue. And the advice that you've got for the first year and a half, and you're like, whatever, man, I'm still coming in and breaking PRs after doing this. And then once you get to that level that you can no longer maintain that behavior, that's when you kind of get that step back. So I think that you have to have that kind of moment of personal defeat like some sort of difficulty that highlights the importance of changing that behavior or reshaping your habits to get you closer to that goal. So unfortunately, I think that it's our job to remind people and to put out that information and say, it matters what you do here. It matters what you do here.
Outside. It matters but what you do outside too.
We're not omnipresent. We can't be everywhere at once. And I think that it takes having an experience that challenges your perceptions of what you were actually doing, to have that moment where you go, oh, that was good advice.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that concludes the podcast for today. I know that we kind of went over a little bit, but some valuable information. And I think that was just something that was kind of like mulling over in my mind as far as that goes. And then it was good to talk out the Japanese system with you, and then some of the other coaching symposium points as well. So do you want to add anything else? Or?
No, guys, we should be back to a more regular schedule now. We won't have any huge travel things until
December.
Hopefully
maybe.
December. Hopefully. Yeah. So we're going to be back to a more regular schedule here. I kind of want to do a Q&A episode again. So if you guys have any questions, maybe we'll do a Q&A next week. We'll post it up on our stories.
Yeah, we'll post it up on Instagram on the story. We'll just say, hey, any questions for us or the podcast? And then you guys will just throw them up and see what y'all come up with.
Yeah, so send an email to asaweightlifting@gmail.com or hit us up on Instagram, Grayson_Starner, Albuquerque Strength Academy. What's your Mad Gains?
Mine is Mundo. At Mad Gains Mundo. Yeah.
So hit us up on any of those, guys. Send us a question if you want to hear an answer next week.
Yeah. All right. Until next time, happy lifting, y'all.